From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
I'm Ben, you are you, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. We hope this podcast finds you amid grand adventure. If so, we'd love to hear about it. So I'll just get this out of the way, because we talk about the Twitter and the Facebook stuff usually at the end of the show, right,
sure,
guys? Well, we'll just mention here that if you haven't found us yet, please do. We are Conspiracy Stuff on both Facebook and Twitter. And that's one of the most immediate ways to contact us. We would like to thank the listeners out there who wrote to us several times over the past months and asked us to cover this topic, because it just kept popping up in conversation, right?
Yeah, it would pop up in conversation and on the fringes of a topic that we were discussing. It came up, I think, in Alchemy. I remember you guys mentioning it, and it came up in a couple other places right before that, too.
I also seem to recall it coming up one time where I was like, aren't all djinn demons? And Ben schooled me real quick, so hopefully we'll get some more of that schooling.
Oh, I don't know. We might get schooled on this one, guys. We might be the ones going to school, because this is an episode that's somewhere between a folklore episode, a cryptid episode, a possession episode. Djinn run into a lot of things. And first, we have to do a disclaimer for this one.
As Ben said, this is an academic exploration of this topic, about the folklore behind the what a djinn is, what djinn are. And we're not trying to persuade anybody to look at anything in a certain way, especially to ascribe to any certain set of beliefs or anything like that.
Right, and our goal is not to confirm or deny anyone's religious beliefs.
Right, your spiritual convictions, as always, are your own. So let's get into this exploration. This has fascinated the three of us for a long time. If you grew up in the West and are not a practitioner of Islam or not familiar with some of the beliefs surrounding the Middle East and other related parts of the world, then you probably have some very specific ideas of what a djinn or a genie is.
Oh, sure. I mean, a lot of my beliefs come from pop culture, from movies, television, books, comics, things where it would be a genie, usually spelled with a G.
Sometimes spelled with a J, as in the case of I Dream of Genie.
Yes, yes, exactly. And that's back from the 60s.
That's always the image I had of what it looked like inside the lamp. She had cushions everywhere, like this built-in, like, you know, it looked like a really sweet RV or something, you know, like with shag carpeting, you know, like
it was
the 70s.
Nice.
It was super nice, yeah.
Well, then you go to, you know, horror films that look at genies, like Wishmaster was one that I watched when I was younger. I probably shouldn't have watched it back then.
Wasn't that a Wes Craven movie?
I think Wes Craven was part of it. He produced it or something. Okay. Yeah, but then we get to Aladdin, the Disney movie, which, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I was quoting that movie for years.
Yeah, man, I had that soundtrack on CD.
It's a fantastic, it's just a fantastic film.
I rewatched it recently, and it holds up for
sure. I'll say film.
Film. Oh, yeah, it was film. And then you move a little bit forward, and you get to video games where there are different types of djinns that I've encountered in many a virtual world. You probably have too. So what do we know about what these djinns are from these things?
I'd have to say, I think you passed over a very important djinn, Snoop Dogg's Gin and Juice.
Oh, sorry. I also passed over Kazam, you know.
Oh, we forgot Kazam.
Yeah. Oof, Shaq, thank you.
We narrowly avoided the email on that one from Shaq himself.
But so what do we know about genies from those pieces of pop culture?
Well, here's some of the main, I guess we can call them tropes, that have been established about your standard run-of-the-mill genie, djinn, call it what you will. One, often they are imprisoned inside a material artifact, usually a ring or, you know, typically a lamp.
Yeah.
But I guess it could be really anything. Could be perhaps a chest of some kind, like a book even. You know, you see different versions. Remember the Care Bears movie where there was this creepy green-faced ghost thing trapped inside of a book that made the magician's assistant, like, do weird stuff?
I do not remember.
I would argue that that is a djinn in a way, because it's sort of imprisoned inside this artifact. Anyway, I digress. That always scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
That felt like a very intense film when I saw that.
It was really intense.
A movie. I'll see
you. Anyway, so that's a huge part of it. Number two. Typically, they grant wishes with perilous outcomes. And think of even, like, in films, you have, like, an evil, like, apparition that can say, I can make this happen for you, you know, but then other things fall apart as a result of it, you know? That's not really what we think of when we think of Aladdin, you know, but that usually those wishes were,
right.
I want to be the king, or yes. I want to be, you know, Prince Ali or whatever, and that all worked out.
But there, well, there are things that go wrong along the way trying to get this wish.
But it doesn't necessarily have this built-in catastrophe. Like this one-to-one, like you wish
monkey's
for a thing
kind of
that
thing.
Means something
sure.
horrible has to happen to somebody else. So the perilous outcomes, definitely different versions of that. And finally, I mean, a really common perception of this genie type of djinn is that they have magical powers, you know, can shapeshift. Mm-hmm. And to me, something that and always sticks with it for me is that they have a master that once they appear to them, they are bound to that master until they have used up some finite number of wishes.
Yep.
Interesting stuff, you know, because what we're talking about now would be, again, these Western conceptions we have based largely on pop culture, probably one of the biggest popularizers of the, of djinn folklore. The concept of djinn comes to us from, Scheherazade and the 1001 stories, right? Or excuse me, 1001 Arabian Nights. But before we go into the actual world or belief system involving djinn, I have to ask you guys, because I can't let it go. Listeners, you may have heard me accidentally humming part of this song as Noel and Matt were talking. What's your favorite song from the Aladdin soundtrack?
Oh man.
Do you have one?
Musically, I'm really fond of the Arabian Nights song. It's got a really cool melody, very evocative. I do think that's interesting. When I rewatched Aladdin recently, the lyrics changed a little bit.
What do you mean? Couple
lines.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like a couple lines.
Like a Mandela effect kind of thing?
No. There was this, I remember when it came out and I had the soundtrack and there's a line in the song where it says, talking about, you know, what it's like in this part of the world. Mm-hmm. And there's a line that says, where they cut off your hand if they don't like your face. Mm-hmm. It's barbaric, but hey, it's home. Mm-hmm. And they changed that. It's not that lyric anymore.
Oh, wow.
Do you think that was due maybe to post 9/11?
I'm not sure when it happened, but, you know, someone definitely in somewhere along that process found that line to be offensive.
So do you think maybe it was just a censorship thing where they said that line is too much for kids?
It's possible. Yeah. That's what I would think. I mean, because you gotta think too, that movie's been reissued probably several times. So I'd also be interested to see at what point that happened, but we digress.
So let's digress further.
All the way to the beginning.
Let's digress all the way to the beginning as the Mad Hatter said to Alice, start at the beginning, go through the middle and stop at the end. Djinn. Spelled J-I-N-N in English, sometimes D-J-I-N-N, the root of genies. This concept, let's look at the word first, etymology. It's often said to come from an Arabic root word meaning to hide, and some interpretations take this a little bit further to mean beings who are concealed from the senses. Djinn is the plural, the singular would be genie, J-I-N-N-I. And that's where genie comes from, but when it was anglicized in some places, people took it to mean a guardian of a specific place. And while these are popular theories, there are also competing theories or interpretations. One saying that genie or the concept originally came from what were seen as demons or evil spirits in early Christian or Judeo-Christian beliefs. Mm-hmm. But unlike some other supernatural beings, djinn are actually mentioned in the Quran. They have an origin story.
Right. In the Quran, God actually makes three sapient forms of life, angels, jinn, and humans. Men were made of clay, angels from light, and jinn are described as being made of a smokeless, scorching fire, which is sort of sinister sounding if you ask me.
Crazy stuff. Like humans, jinn have free will. Some are Muslim and some are not. And like humans, jinn, being capable of good and bad, will be judged by God on the day of judgment and sent to hell or to paradise as their actions accord. But here's the thing. Although jinn are mentioned in the Quran, they were believed in before Islam. They were pre-Islamic originally. And in some cases, there's some evidence that they were maybe gods, or at least spirits that were paid tribute to. In Palmyra, for example, yeah, there's this Aramaic inscription at a place called Beth Fasiel, which pays tribute to the genie spelled G-I-N-N-A-Y-E as the good and rewarding gods.
Wow.
So until about the 4th century, as we rate time today, many of the populations that were in the Middle East practiced different polytheistic religions. There were significant Jewish and later Christian minorities that developed, but polytheism remained the dominant belief system in pre-Islamic Arabia. And jinn, which started in some cases being worshipped as gods, are thought to have later been downgraded to lesser status as spirits, as demons, especially after the religious waves of monotheism.
Yeah, I can see that. You demonize the gods that came prior. I understand that.
Well, there's religious syncretism too, right? Mm-hmm. The idea that when a religion is growing or spreading, it says, well, these other things that exist do exist, and we're not, what we're doing is we're showing you why they exist. They're yes. also part of this belief system, which is the one true belief system, is typically how a lot of religions handle it. So where do jinn hang out?
A lot of times they're in dark places. That may be why when the Westerners came along to create stories out of this, they put them in a lamp that's really dark, or in a ring, or in a cave or something like that.
Lost as well, like sort of like they're buried, totally shut away as if they were not ever meant to be discovered again, kind of thing.
Yes, again, because they're supposed to be isolated, right?
Right, and if we could talk just a little bit about the idea of where the artifact belief comes in. King Solomon was thought to command spirits that were a type of jinn through the use of a ring, right? The Ring mm-hmm. of Solomon, which I think also still shows up in pop culture, right?
Yeah. Oh, the that ring is everywhere. I would say, and I don't know if this is true because I haven't looked too much into it, but the one ring to rule them all, I think that might have some kickbacks towards Mr. Solomon.
And then also we should mention the grimoires, or the books of magic known as the Key of Solomon or the Lesser Keys of Solomon, also thought to contain rituals which, when performed properly, allow one to communicate with and or control these spirits. Matt, Noel, and I have not attempted to do this as far as I know.
Speak for yourself, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
We kind of had a thing.
Okay. Matt and Noel have attempted to do this. I don't want to put you guys on blast and ask too much about how it worked out.
Well, I mean, we're here, right?
That doesn't change one way or the other. So the idea here, which I thought was fascinating, and I'm speculating here, I wanted to ask you listeners, because I couldn't find any solid proof of this, but were there jinn cults? Like, what other than, you know, other than being a statue or shrine one would pay tribute to, were there actually religious systems that were large, built on worshiping maybe one or two creatures or gods that would later become jinn? I don't know, but it's interesting.
Well, yeah, and it wouldn't have to be that large to be a cult of a certain jinn, especially if it was worshipped, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years for mm-hmm. a while there mm-hmm. as a god. Then everything broke off as the new religions came through, and then they, you know, maybe an isolated group somewhere. Mm-hmm. I can totally imagine that.
I could also see, like, maybe there's, like, a rogue djinn, you know, who wants to, like, become more like a god and then command his own followers. I could just see that in terms of, like, folklore.
Oh, yeah, that happens. And we'll get to it in just a second. I think you'll really appreciate this part. Before we get to that, let's talk about the different types of djinn. Because not all are created equal. Some have specialties. Some are automatically evil. Some could go either way. But as we go into this, do you want to establish that the folklore gets kind of sticky because there are creatures or beings in other regions or in sometimes even in other belief systems that are considered djinn. And then there are arguments that people will have over whether one type of creature should be considered a subclass of djinn or its own thing.
Gotcha.
Well, with that being said, djinn are smart. Have social organizations in their community. They have kings. They have laws. They have marriages. They have births. You know, all the normal days of our lives stuff.
All the boring stuff.
But while humans cannot perceive djinn, apparently they can perceive the human world. So it's an interesting idea because it means that there is an invisible world occurring all around us. And we are in some sort of glass house of existence or some sort of one-way mirror.
Yeah, there are a few planes of existence up than we are, mm-hmm. and somehow they can see down, but the mirror only goes one way.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So one common belief in Muslim lore list, again, this list is not universally accepted, but let's look at the various types of djinn. The first would be the marid or married, M-A-R-I-D. And I do apologize for pronunciation of Arabic here. In Lane's Arabic English lexicon, these types of djinn are said to be the strongest, the ones of great power, in the Lane's lexicon, they're actually said to be evil, but this isn't universally agreed on. These are the ones we think of when we think of the genie in Aladdin. The ability to do all these powerful things, even unto granting wishes. If you flatter them enough, if they mm-hmm. like you, if you do something for them, and that's what people in the West generally think about, but that's not all of the djinn in the world.
No, you also have an ifrit, and this is one that I have heard of before. You may have heard of this as well. It's often described as this enormous winged creature of fire. Think a phoenix almost in my head. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm seeing. It can be either sex, male or female. It lives underground, and a lot of times it will fly around ruins of some place where mm-hmm. Tragedy has occurred or war has been fought or, you know, where something has occurred where perhaps there was some death.
And then we get to, it's called the Shaitan or the Shaitan, S-H-I-T-A-N, S-H-A-Y-T-A-N. This goes exactly to what you were talking about, Noel. So, the concept is like this, that during the creation of the world, there is one djinn that refuses to bow to God. Its name is Iblis.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar. A little like, oh, I don't know, Satan.
Was that a church lady reference?
Oh, God.
I don't know, was it?
So this would be considered the devil in the Quran. And the devil had followers, djinn who decided to side with Iblis. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because while there are parallels, there are differences as well. The primary thing here is that these creatures, which sometimes are not considered djinn, but simply demons, depending upon which scholar you're talking to or which book you're basing it on. Mm-hmm. Is it based on the Quran? Is it based on earlier, like folklore, right? Academic studies. So there are going to be differences in interpretation here, but the main thing that always stays the same is that these are the bad guys.
Nice.
They're not cool. And then speaking
the Shaitan.
Yeah. Speaking of not cool, there's something else. The ghoul.
So I guess that's where that word comes from.
Yes. Yeah. Just so. Yeah. Nowadays, we think of ghouls as the, similar to a vampire, right? These undead creatures, usually that eat flesh rather than drink blood for sustenance.
Ghouls and goblins is what I see. I see mm-hmm. 2D little pixelated things.
They tend to travel by shambling.
Yes,
that is their primary form of locomotion. Mm-hmm. I actually think I play the Fallout series a lot. I really enjoy those. And there is a whole, group of characters called ghouls, and they've basically been irradiated to the point where they look like, you know, zombies, but they don't necessarily eat flesh unless they've kind of passed a threshold, and then they get to a point
gone
where they will be exactly. They're called feral ghouls. Exactly.
Do they have any profound abilities, or are they just rotting people?
It depends. Like, there are some that are so irradiated that they can actually shoot, like, radiation energy at you and, like, vomit, like, you know, radiate radioactive goo. But, you know, some of the ones that are still more or less human, they, you know, run taverns, mm-hmm. things like that, you know.
So the ghouls that we're talking about are a little different, Noel.
I know.
But I love those ghouls. There are several that you interact with in the third one that make me very happy. But these a lot of times will inhabit a graveyard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or other places that just there's no humans, no mm-hmm. live humans.
And this type of djinn has been said to be sired by Iblis. So not siding with this diabolical character against God, but to have been created by this diabolical character. And then there is the djann, J-A-N-N, thought of as the weakest type of djinn. So a few traditions divide djinn into three classes: those who have wings and fly in the air, those who resemble snakes and dogs, and those who simply travel ceaselessly. But they've also been described as creatures of different forms: vultures, snakes, others look humanoid, they might even be dragons, or a number of other animals.
And it's said that some of these can shapeshift, right?
Right.
So yeah. That would may be another reason why we have so many different depictions of animals and widely varying animals.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about gin and magic. Did you think I was going to say gin and juice?
I was really hoping you would.
I was hoping I would too. Hope springs eternal. I guess that'll be for after work, right? In folklore, of course, these beings are often associated with magic. It's a concept that exists in the modern day still as the old rub a magic lamp, mm-hmm. get some wishes bits. And we mentioned that certain historical humans like King Solomon were said to control djinn. And in some ways, acts of magic entirely have been described as a magician entering into some sort of contract with one or more of these beings, of djinn, and worshiping them or, paying some sort of obeisance in order to receive information. That's one of the big ones mm-hmm. About unknown things, so clairsentience, clairvoyance, or to receive riches, power, well, you know, the
yep,
whole
the
nine,
standard.
The usual. The usual supervillain starter package. And we've got some lines from the Quran here. I had mentioned Iblis, right? We mentioned mm-hmm. Iblis, who would be Satan in this story. Satan didn't follow, or Iblis didn't follow God's command to prostrate himself unto man. So he still wouldn't play ball, but he said, I'm not the one to prostrate myself to a human being, because, you know, you made them out of clay. And then to which point God said, get out.
Yeah.
And the existence of djinn, as mentioned in the Quran, matters immensely, maybe more so than you might think, because for many people, they would say, well, Matt, Noel, Ben, this is interesting, but this is folklore. Why are you talking about it? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy. You see, belief in djinn is not something restricted to thousands of years ago. It is not something that exists distant chronologically. There is a modern belief in djinn. There are, like, people across the world believe that djinn are real.
Yeah, and they want to prove that it's real through science.
Right. Though not all Muslims believe in jinn, many do, and some universities publish research and hold workshops seeking to prove the existence of jinn and argue how they exist in the modern world or how science can help humanity understand the nature of these beings.
So an example would be from Jinn Invade Campus by Purvis Hoodboy. A workshop, quote, a workshop titled Jinns and Black Magic was organized in Islamabad by the Department of Humanities at the ComSats Institute of Technology, which is the CIIT. One of Pakistan's largest universities. The invited speaker, Raza Zia-ul-Haq, introduced as a spiritual cardiologist, is reputedly an expert on demonic possessions and evil spirits.
So this is an elite university in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So this is an active area of study, right? It's very important to say, for instance, unlike what would another thing be? Fairies or, imagine insert supernatural being
sure.
Here. It's not as derided as those kinds of beliefs.
Or if kind of like an angels expert came to speak at Harvard or something is
yeah.
What I'm imagining.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison, or at MIT or something. Mm-hmm. So while proposing theories about the nature of jinn, these researchers and academics have at times said, well, science can help us understand these. You'll see references to maybe microorganisms or parallel universes or forms of imperceivable energy and higher frequencies. At this point, the concept of jinn is not scientifically accepted in the West or many non-Muslim parts of the world. And again, we want to emphasize we're not painting with a broad brush here. We're saying nothing about all people of a specific religion. What we are establishing instead is that people in the modern world today, as you listen to this, believe that jinn exists. And that's not just it. They don't just exist as some sort of passive watchful entities, right? That you can maybe, get some wishes out of if you have the right ring or the right lamp. They have agency. They have the ability to do things in the human world to humans, and this is kind of the disturbing part.
I don't know, man. I feel like there's plenty of Christians that would say the same thing about angels.
I think that's an excellent point. Yeah.
No, absolutely. But the creepy thing here is, what if these things do exist, and they can possess humans to cause humans to do things that they normally wouldn't? Perhaps to influence something politically, mm-hmm. a movement, mm-hmm. something like that. That's one of the beliefs, right?
Right. Yeah. There's this belief that jinn are able to possess human beings. And this is a weird thing. So you can go right now on YouTube and see footage of what are said to be exorcisms. And we talked about this mm-hmm. a little bit in a previous episode when we covered the differences between exorcisms around the world. You know, like the Catholic Church has a very specific right, and in Islam, there are specific rites as well. You can also find people who are describing the signs of possession by a jinn, or the signs of someone trafficking in magic, or the sign that you have encountered somehow a jinn. And the possession is typically exorcised through the recitation of the Quran, seeking refuge, remembrance, and supplicators, it's also a way that other sicknesses or problems might be addressed. Mm-hmm. And I really like people to check out our previous episode on exorcism.
Yes.
Because we had an interesting conversation that I guess we won't get into too much here, but I want to know what you folks think. Is possession real in your experience? Because we know that historically signs of mental illness were mistaken for possession. We know that signs of grief or maybe psychotic breaks or maybe even mental disabilities all mistaken for possession at some point in the past, which is a horrific thing. But according to people who believe this, jinn possession is something that experts can clearly discern, and through the use of these techniques drive the jinn out. And unlike demons possessing people in Catholic or Christian belief systems, Jin are not necessarily evil.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
They have free will. So I was looking at, in the course of research, I was looking at some scholars, some Islamic scholars talking about jinn possession. And one of the big reasons for possession, according to some of these sources, was love, like a jinn being in love with a human.
With the human that they're possessing or with another human that they're possessing A to get to B?
Either way.
Whoa.
What if we take it back a step to our early description of kind of the preconceived ideas of a genie or a djinn? And as we've gotten to where we are now in the podcast, I think we've sort of taken that apart a little bit. And I'm just wondering, is that, do you consider that version, those points we made about, you know, being chained to a an artifact of some sort and, you know, granting wishes and things like that, and ultimately being a force for kind of chaos based on what happens when those wishes are granted, is all that just from kind of like whitewashed, like retellings of, you know, folk stories and made to be more palatable for a wider audience, sort of like in the same way that, you know, grim fairy tales were much, much nastier and then they're sort of retooled, you know?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. What do you think, Matt?
I would say that's exactly what's happened, because we've got one specific type of djinn that are being described by most of the popular culture, that the Marid, I don't know how to say it correctly. I think it's the Marid. And, you know, so you've got that one particular story and then you kind of expand out and say, well, this is what all genies are like when you look at it through that lens. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, I can see the religious syncretism, occurring there as well. And it's also important for us to note that modern belief in jinn is not necessarily unique in the process of this sort of belief. For instance, there are other persistent beliefs in things that, you know, the rest of the world would call supernatural rather than factual. Ghosts of ancestors are still commonly venerated in religions around the world. And then invisible elves in Iceland. You guys heard about that, right?
They're real, guys. I think they're real.
The Huldu folk. These elves in Icelandic folklore, the belief is so commonplace, or purportedly so commonplace, that it affects modern construction. Also, one thing that fascinates me is when people look at beliefs in spirits, and you know, there are some people who could put up a very strong argument that jinn are not spirits so much as they are another type of living, thinking being, you know, because they do live. They're not undead. So this stuff astonishes and amazes me, both the growth of the folklore to the modern day beliefs. And I know for certain that it is easy for some people to feel maybe condescending in some way and say, oh, look at this outdated belief, and I live in the modern age, and because I live in the modern age, I know better than these people who believe differently from me. But especially if you live in the developed world, I would ask you to examine some of the common beliefs we have. Future historians are going to think that we were so foolish when we explain the following situation. Yes, back in the day, we used to hop into these machines that weighed thousands and thousands of pounds and were powered by explosions internally, and we would drive within feet of each other because we called it driving. And they would say, well, hey, wait, how did you do it safely? And we said, well, we had this honor system. You see, we painted lines on places where we would drive, and we just said we wouldn't hit each other. And we'd say, oh, but so is that how you avoided accidents? And we'd say, no, accidents happened.
Constantly.
We believed we were safer.
But nobody got hurt.
Right. So what I'm saying is that it is an error for anyone, me, Noel, Matt, you, perhaps listener, to assume that we have the conclusive and final answer on what we believe and the worth of what we believe, right? So I would say we have to be very careful not to cast aspersions or stones. You know, if I'm in Iceland and somebody tells me not to mess with a rock because something lives there,
then you just go, okay.
Yeah, whether or not I personally believe, I'm not going to launch into some lecture, you know, about the nature of geology. And this is where we leave it. We are a world filled to the brim with people. There are billions of us. And amongst those billions, depending on who you believe and what you're reading, there exist billions more unseen things that, in terms of philosophy and mental ability, are quite similar to us. So just like our earlier work on coded languages, you know, again, there's this invisible world. And more I think about it, we're running into these concepts of invisible worlds. We talked about train hoppers and some things, serial killer cults. We talked about Jin. So that's really what I see us going into more and more, are these ideas of hidden worlds and this concept of what we can and cannot prove. But I have a question for you guys, listeners. Do you have any, in your neck of the woods, do you have any popular folklore beliefs in unseen or supernatural beings? And if so, do you believe the stories? Like, could you tell us some specifics?
Yeah, do you have any anecdotes where mm-hmm. you maybe have had an encounter? Right. I want to hear those.
Yeah, that you could or could not explain. And I'd like to close on a question for you guys. If we each had a wish, and it was, and you couldn't wish for more wishes, what would your wish be?
Oh man, this is tough.
I think I would probably, I mean, you could split it down the middle. You could go for like a very self-serving wish, mm-hmm. or you could go for a wish that helps others. But then you get into that situation where it's all about the language. It's all about the wording of the wish.
Yeah, it's very,
you
got to
be really careful, you know, because you might say, I want world peace, and it means that everyone dies.
Right. Yeah. Or you might say, I want to live forever, and you do, but you still age.
Yeah. And everyone,
or you're trapped somewhere.
Yeah, and all your loved ones die around you. Mm-hmm. I guess I would do some very carefully worded version of just wanting to never, you know, like be able to always make sure I can take care of my family and myself mm-hmm. and just have maybe not absurd wealth, but just be comfortable all the time and never have to worry about paying bills and anything of that nature. Mm-hmm. Just have some sort of like, maybe it's a magic platinum card that you can just pay for everything with and, wow. and that you never get a bill, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. I know that's very selfish and boring, but I just feel like the world peace one would, you know, could potentially be disastrous.
Yeah.
And that's great. Yeah. I would ask for a single tomato plant that always has tomatoes on it. Always. No matter how many tomatoes you take from the plant, there's always more tomatoes.
I feel like you get sick of tomatoes.
I don't care, man.
Would
I would
be
get
part
sick
of the
of
wish?
Tomatoes. Yeah. And I will never. And yeah, this caveat at the end. I will never get sick of tomatoes.
I can always sell the tomatoes.
That's what I'm saying.
Have you been going through some tomato-related shenanigans, man? Are you okay?
I was trying to imagine something that would be super manageable, that would be small. I was trying to think of ways that it could hurt me. And
oh,
I
yeah.
don't think...
You'd have to...
What if they were killer tomatoes?
Mm-hmm. Oh. And you did mention the size of the plant.
Oh,
so what if it's so huge?
Dude, you're boned.
Oh, it's over.
It's
right.
Okay. We don't have a genie in the room.
What about you, Ben?
I have no idea, and I'm not sure I want to reveal that much about my personality,
well,
but fair
just
is fair.
Make one up, like pretend.
I would probably wish for, in a very carefully worded way, as Noel said, I would wish for, some series of superpowers, and I would try to sneak them all in as like the same thing. My one wish would be a run-on sentence,
nice.
Obviously, just a CYA, right? And then I would try to use those powers to make the world a better place, because it's all about the journey, isn't it? And I also think I'm also concerned, just in this fictional world of granted wishes, I also wonder if there's some higher chance or likelihood of things going wrong if the wish affects more people. So maybe if you just wish for something for yourself and then use that to affect a larger change, it's safer.
That's really good, Ben. I mean, even something like invisibility. Let's think about how often that comes into play as being the ultimate power to get things done. You know what I mean? So you could certainly affect some change,
dude,
with invisibility.
You could sneak into so many places in Bermuda and Singapore. And you could do the next Panama Papers.
I would. Well, you know, that's the thing. Would you be invisible to the human eye, invisible to everything? Could you wear clothes? Because I don't want to try to sneak into places naked.
No, you would
want
to be invisible at will to all.
But then would you just fall through the map?
Listeners,
video game reference,
listeners, I know Matt and I wish you guys could see the way that Noel's eyes lit up when he said to all. That was great. I would go for, invulnerability, teleportation. I would say psionic powers just so I could get all of them.
Just say all the X-Men. That's all you have to say.
I don't know, man. There's some X-Men who aren't that great.
True.
But, that
Jen's gonna call shenanigans on that wish though, dude. Like, I mean, it's like, come on, man. Come on.
Yeah, they've seen it all.
You can't do that.
Like, who do you think you are? You gotta pick
one puny mortal and then they would crush you with their giant thumb.
Yeah. Or maybe it'll short circuit and it'll say, I've had a hard week, Ben. Best I could do is a cheesesteak. And I'll say, thanks, dude.
It's cool, man.
I appreciate it.
Never-ending cheesesteak.
It better be a great cheesesteak.
There's always more cheesesteak.
The never-ending cheesesteak. Oh, oh.
Dude, that's crazy. You could feed the world with one cheesesteak that never ends.
I think we're optimistic here, and we're thinking of the best possible outcomes. But I'm going to spend some time pondering what a decent wish would be and how you would write it. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, ladies and gentlemen. What kind of stuff would you wish for? And please do remember to tell us about what kind of things or beings you've heard about in your neck of the global woods. We want to hear from you. And speaking of hearing from you, it's time for
Shout Out Corners. Yes, that's right. Shout out corner. The moment in every show where we shout out listeners who request said shout out. First today, we have one for East Bay Newt, aka Newtie. He or she is interested in hearing more about Planet Nine.
Hmm.
And I fear I can't help with that. Can you, what's Planet Nine?
It's the proposed ninth planet that we found in the solar system that's out. Passed
fairly
over
recently.
There by Pluto, way out there.
Oh, I missed that one, guys. I want to know more too.
It hasn't been confirmed yet, but we're pretty sure there's something there from the way the other planets move.
Well, let's dig into it. That's an excellent suggestion. Thank you, Newty. Our next shout out is from Justin for this quote specifically. The best way to find a needle in a haystack is to set the hay on fire. This goes back to our earlier conversation about the Panama Papers. And you can find Justin. He is at Mathanug. And that's MATHANUGG if you want to follow him and hear more interesting quotes.
If I remember correctly, though, I think the analogy we used was a needle in a pile of needles. But unfortunately, needles are not flammable.
Right. In that case, it was needles on needles. And finally today, shout out to Debbie Zutant. I think I'm saying that correctly. She wrote to us on Facebook. She said some very nice things. And she also said if we are ever in the Florida Keys, gentlemen, we are invited out to her bar where she bartends. And she said we'll have an extra special time. I guess because she would get us drunk.
Sounds like a plan.
Game.
Game on. All right. Well, that's all from us for today, ladies and gentlemen. Please check out our video on Jin. Please also stay tuned to hear what topics we're covering next. We do a live show about once a week, and you can ask us anything. Typically, we're over on Facebook now, right, guys?
That's correct. We're hanging out on Facebook all the time. We're going to be throwing some more videos up there very soon. What is the date right now, guys? Two more days. We have a very special classic episode that we're going to put up on Facebook very soon. and you'll know why.
And in the meantime, if you have any ideas for upcoming topics we should cover, we would love to hear from you. Take a page out of Nudie, Justin, and Debbie's book and drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter, or if you don't like the social media rigmarole and you've got a longer story to tell us, we'd love to hear that as well. You can email us directly. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.